Check the mic and make sure it sound right. Boy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Barry Moore. My next guest comes to us from Sylvan Lake, Alberta, a Beta Canada ambassador, Muay Thai competitor, ice and enduro racer, taking part in events across Canada and in the United States. Many of you know her from her Instagram profile promoting fitness as well as off-road life. She's a genuine badass. Coming up next, this is Courtney Schmale.
Yes, you're welcome.
You've been pretty busy. I know yesterday I caught your show with the Brat Girls there.
The Brat Babes.
Brat Babes, yeah.
Yes.
So I'll try not to go over the same ground. But obviously there's going to be some common questions because whatever, I'm only a human being.
Hey, it's all good. You do you, I'll answer anything. It's all good. We'll make it our own.
Sounds good. So you're more than a racer. You're also, like an Instagram influencer. And you said that you're a Beta ambassador. How does that work for you? Like, how does that work for Beta?
So with Beta, I'm on, like, I do a 2-year contract. So I just finished a 2-year contract with them this season. So that's why I got my new 2021. And yes, Steven had approached me about 2 years ago, obviously, and just said if I'd be interested in representing their brand and just being more of an influence for them, supporting their brand, and then the perks of being able to travel around with them as well and go to, he flew me out to Ontario for their demo days and just to basically represent for female ambassadors for Beta, which was super cool. So things like that, got a good personal relationship, helped support the brand. And, you know, he helps me out with the bikes and everything. And it's a good relationship. And I love it. It's awesome. He's so good to me. And I love the bikes. So that makes it even better. I had a Beta before I actually became an ambassador. So that was just like the cherry on top of the cake. I was like, this is so cool. It's like kind of what I had visualized and really wanted. I was like, I know one day that I want to be an ambassador for Beta because I love these bikes so much. So, and then just escalated from there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. I guess as an ambassador, then you sort of feel obligated to step up your game, like to always put on your best face kind of thing.
Just being me and doing what I do is kind of what they're looking for. And, you know, I'm always out there representing the brand. As far as like my race results go, it's important to myself that I want to do better than I did before. However, most importantly, what he's looking for is how I'm representing the brand, what I'm doing for the local communities, and how I can help make them build their brand as well as much as my own too. So,
yeah, good partnership, brand recognition.
Yes.
Locally, you ride with Rocky Mountain Dirt Riders, I guess.
Rocky Motorcycle Club. So because I'm Sylvan Lake, more Red Deer area. So yes, I'm a director on the Rocky Motorcycle Club. So I do lots for them and help them host events, races, and all that jazz. So
that's pretty awesome. When you first slung a leg over the bike, did you ever see this as like the future Courtney?
You know, no, not at all. Actually, it's so crazy how this happens. And it's, you know, you're literally, like I said, even yesterday, like you're one decision away from life changing events. It's unreal. So I never thought this would happen. However, I knew that when I started getting more heavily involved into the race community, and I knew that this is the path I wanted to take to help build my brand, help the community, and help other inspire other women riders and get into the sport and build their confidence, just kind of escalated like little bits at a time. And, you know, you have a vision and you visualize things. And I was like, I want this. I'm going to do this. So I just did it. I just dove in and made it happen.
That's awesome. Yeah. When you say you want to inspire other female riders, do you get a lot of like rider recognition from other women out on the trails?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, I've had people approach me on the trails and they're like, hey, like I follow you. I really love what you're doing. This is awesome. And I'm like, that's awesome. That's what I live for. I just want to help promote the brands. I want to help promote the riding and help inspire people to get out and do what they love and share their passion and, You know, I just get so stoked to show people other places and, you know, do little tours with them and group rides. I'm like, yes, bring everyone. I don't care, you know, your skill level. We're going to help you get there. And I just want to see them conquer, you know, the, say a huge mountain climb or something. And that's what I live for, is just showing people these places and having them feel like the struggle was worth it getting there.
Yeah, fair. I know as an early, when I first started riding, one of the biggest things, struggles for me was just heading down the trail, facing the unknown, you know, like, and I guess, those kinds of tour opportunities, when you're taking somebody, like you're going to hold them by the hand kind of thing. So yeah, the unknown's a little less scary, be the light for them.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
So you're an ice racer and an off-road racer. How did you decide? Like, I understand how you could get into off-road, but how did you decide for ice? Because that's pretty Canadiana, I guess.
So ice racing, yeah. My close friend, Brian Roberts, he approached me and said, hey, you know, take my 450, try it out. And I was like, all right, sure. And because I had volunteered at the Rocky Motorcycle Club, we were affiliated with the ice racing events. So it kind of went hand in hand. You know, I was looking for something to do in the winter. I was like, all right, sure. I'll hop on and I'll race it for this season, because they wanted some more women in the sport to help fill the classes. So next I know it, my first race, I was addicted and had to get my own bike set up for it, get tires and everything. And well, this year we didn't have a season, so that was kind of a bummer. But yeah, it was just cool how it worked out. Thanks to Brian, you know, all it takes is that one person, here, try my bike, come to the ice race. And then they're hooked. They're literally hooked from the first time they try it.
I can remember when you were throwing on the fenders to your bike, like getting it ready for the ice, protect them from the Mad Max spikes.
Oh, and yeah.
It was sort of like one of the first times I ever thought about it as a possibility here. Like, because I guess my off-road experience is only a few years. Like, compared to me, you're a veteran, and you say you've only been in it for 5 years. So there's like plenty of history in the province, I guess. But yeah, you were one of the first people I knew to try ice racing. And I thought it was pretty sweet.
It is honestly, like I'll say, it is a really cool sport, and it gave me so much confidence being able to hit high speeds, just railing corners. Cause yeah, you know, I know the police were out there one time watching our race in Sylvan, and they were clocking everyone, seeing how fast they were going. And they were clocking people going like 117 into the corners. Yes, like you're going so fast, you're tapped out as fast as you can go. And it's basically a game of who could hold it the longest into that corner without being scared. It's such an adrenaline rush, but it makes you feeling comfortable hitting high speeds and railing corners.
How's the traction feel?
Oh my gosh. You have like 10 times the amount of traction on the ice with the spikes than you do dirt. It's crazy. You just wouldn't expect it. You're like, this is so weird, because you're on ice and a dirt bike. But at the same time, like the spikes are so aggressive. They're different than off-road enduro spikes that you use in the winter. They're super sharp. So yeah, you got tons of traction. However, we share a track with the side-by-sides and the quads. So after a day of everyone going through, those studded side-by-sides create ruts that are like damn near like 5 inches deep. And, you know, on a bike on two wheels, you're coming in the corner and you're skipping along these guys, and holy, is that sketchy. You're just hanging on, and, you know, the more throttle you can hold it through, then the better you can ride out the rut. So it's really scary.
I was going to ask you for ruts, because I could just see, I don't know, sort of like burning in a track versus carving it in the dirt.
But yeah. It's so weird. It's so different. Love it.
Have you had any crashes on the ice?
Oh, knock on wood. No. However, I have seen some pretty wild crashes during my race, actually. So, you know, you'll come into a corner. A lot of people will slide out in the corners and just kind of wipe out a little bit. But I've seen, just like side out on the outside. And then you're like, whoa, he almost hit them, and that gets a little sketchy. One buddy, Travis Reed, his guards came forward, or they broke loose and then went over his front tire, and it just washed him right out. And Riley Storman, they were like neck and neck, and he came up right behind him, and he slammed on his brake, and he made himself crash into the bank because he didn't want to run him over, but he ran over his back a bit and just like cut up his coat. So good thing he was wearing his chest protector and everything. So there's incidents like that. Like it gets scary. Those things are sharp.
There's no way I'd want to be run over by an ice racing tire. It's just like a cheese tire, like
it's like cheese grater.
Going to off-road, I guess. You do race a fair amount. What's your most memorable race series?
I love racing the Rocky Club in the men's B class because, you know, you develop such a cool, fun relationship with the guys there. And you know, they're like, oh, I don't want to let a girl beat me this time. And they're so much fun. I always have the best memories with them. And you know, they tease you lots. And it's just good times. So I'd say the Rocky Club's some of my most memorable races as far as that series goes. But, you know, I love racing the AMSA too, and the CMA is always fun. Or, well, what's now Second Gear Club. Yeah, it's all fun. They all have their own cool memories. I don't know if I could just pick one race or one series.
That's fair enough. What of the local races do you feel is one of the most difficult races you've been in?
Local ones, I would say Marble, out by Rocky. That's like local for me. That one's probably the most difficult in the sense of it's a cross country. It's about a 65-kilometer race from point A to B, and that one really tests you. There's a lot of good hill climbs, rocky terrain, and some really tight single track. It's a long race, and that's probably. I think when it was raining and started hailing, that's when it was became one of the harder races I've ever done. But you throw the weather on top of all that gnarly terrain, right? It makes it a little more aggressive.
It can be brutal. The weather can change a course for the worst, or it can also lend some advantages. But
It worked great for me because I was a good technical rider and I could power through all that. And my endurance is what usually outdoes a lot of people. So I kind of depend on that.
Yeah, I would expect you have pretty high endurance based off your fitness regimen. Yeah, how did you get into the fitness thing?
Yeah, you know, I've always kind of had a base. You know, I've always liked, you know, my high school sports. Always been into fitness that way. And my dad, when we were younger, he taught us karate. He's a 7th-degree black belt in karate. So, you know, he kind of really pushed us into sports, and it was just always a thing for us. We were always in sports in school and super athletic that way. Even, you know, my whole family was like that. Just became active. I guess, how did I become more as a coach? How did I start there is, started training at Absolute Fitness in Red Deer because of my sister. She was doing Muay Thai there because she's a world competitor and she does that as her sport. And she's like, yeah, come train with us. Come start building a good strength program. I'm like, okay, like, you know, getting more into biking. I hadn't been racing at this point yet, but I wanted to excel and become more stronger, just being more self-sufficient, independent on my bike so I could start, you know, even just picking it up on my own, which I never used to be able to do. So I started there. And then there was a time where I had, I guess, gone through a divorce in my life. So my lifestyle choices weren't as healthy. So I was kind of looking for a different outlet in which I more went towards fitness. So from that point, decided to get a little more heavily involved and create better habits for my lifestyle. And it just kind of escalated from there and never really looked back. After training with Absolute, I decided to become a coach and became really good friends with my boss, Will, who is dating my sister. So it's all kind of in the family. It just all started one thing after another. And it's just a huge part of my life now. I live and eat and breathe fitness, like everything.
Yeah, it's following your Instagram, I guess. It's pretty clear. Fitness has a huge role because not easily half of the images are fitness versus dirt bike, you know, if not mountain tops and things like that. So that's pretty awesome. So you ride with a lot of local legends like Jared Stock and Shane Cuthbert. How did you find yourself in their company, I guess?
Well, with Shane, I had took some classes with him, and I've seen him throughout all the races, and I'm like, oh, this guy's awesome. I really value the way he rides and his training, so I really wanted to learn from that and expand my riding abilities to become better and excel, especially through racing. So yeah, I started to do one of his clinics, and I've been following him. That's kind of how, you know, the Instagram world feeds off. It's so nice for that because you can really communicate or connect with people that way. As far as Jared goes, yeah, I met him through Instagram too. I knew him previously, or knew of him back when he was racing off-road in 2016 as well. And then, you know, now we're, you know, looking for riding buddies. It's super nice to have someone that always is like, yeah, let's go ride. Let's do this. And he's been super helpful again to me as well. Him and Shane have very similar riding styles. So it's nice that I like to watch and learn from both of them. So yeah, super down to earth people. Love learning from them. It's awesome. They're really, yeah, it's been good to learn from them. Kind of all I know from that. Yeah.
They're both pretty chill. Like I had the chance to talk with both of them. They really have a huge passion for the sport, and they're at this phase, I guess, in their lives or careers where all they want to do is just give back. And they're very generous with their time. I don't know how else to describe that.
No, yeah. You're 100% right. You can really tell when someone truly loves the sport because they're willing to go out of their way to, you know, deliver any type of content that's beneficial to you. Like, hey, like, I think you should try this because it's going to fix this. And, you know, they're willing to, you know, show you videos, send you this. And they doesn't, you know, they're not asking for anything in return, which is really nice. It's, hey, this person truly has a passion for helping other people. Like, they want to help you do better. And I just think that's very admirable. It's amazing that there's people like that who want to help you just succeed and do better. It doesn't happen often.
No, it's fair. It's very rare that people want to help, genuinely help. Everyone seems to be in it for themselves in some, like, twisted way.
Oh, well, yeah.
So you hold clinics, do you not?
Yeah. So Amber Giroux and myself, we do ladies classes together. We have a lot of like women who are just getting into the sport. They're, you know, they're not really sure where to start. They don't really want to learn from their husbands or boyfriends because, you know, how guys can be sometimes like, oh, why can't you just do it? You know, we can't just go up this, or they don't really know how to explain it, to break it down maybe so it's more understanding to them. So it's nice that we can, Amber and I can do that for them and just even help build their confidence a little bit. And it's just a great weekend that you know, all the women can get together, they can meet other women riders and just help promote the sport more and show them that, you know, it doesn't have to be hard. You can still have fun and do it. You don't have to make it. Don't have so high expectations out of yourself. And yeah, it's nice to host ladies clinics and do those kind of things.
That's fair. Do you ever host clinics with guys involved?
Haven't yet been open to it. I know Steven from Beta was trying to get, I mean, obviously due to COVID, we've had so much restrictions and haven't been able to do the events we wanted to do, but he wanted to do some clinics with Sam King and do some touring when we did the Beta days as well. So who knows what the future looks like. Might happen one day, I'm not too sure, but yeah, I'd totally be up for that. It'd be nice to have, you know, male and females into the clinics as well.
That's fair. Sam King is like the backflip guy.
Yeah, he is. Man, is that guy got sick moves. Like, it's so cool to watch in person. Like, the videos don't even do justice. It's pretty wild. It's crazy. He's such a humble, down-to-earth person, too. I really enjoy his company.
With all the people you get a chance to ride with, is there like a common quality that everyone seems to share? Like, I have my thoughts, but I'm just curious about yours.
A common quality. Yeah. I feel like kind of all are almost on the same page. You're, you know, let's go to the woods and, you know, there's nothing else to worry about except for you and your bike. You know, we're all kind of in that same mentality. We live to ride.
There is a point, I think, like just after the beginning where you start to realize that, like talent, well, it matters and ability matters and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't matter as much as you think your first time, like unloading in the staging area, that all these people are willing to take you along and like, yes, you can just be one with the family kind of thing.
Yes. I would say most cases. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what there's I exception. Love about it.
Yeah. There's always the exception.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So when you use the word escape, do you find moto to be an escape for you?
100%. It's like meditation to me. You know, you crave it. You need it. I know if there's like probably, I go more than a week without riding, I'm like, oh, anxiety. I need to go and ride and just let loose. Like that's my thing. That's my little, you know, my niche is out there. I need to be out there and get that fresh air and that bonding time with my bike. It's something that I'm very fortunate to have found what makes me feel alive. You know, it's not very often that people get that opportunity to find something in their life that makes them that happy or that really pushes them to the sense of where they, you know, with biking, it can be really hard. It can be difficult. And sometimes you can be deterred away from it as well, but it always keeps you coming back for more. And I'm just so happy that I have found that thing for me. Like it's where I feel at most peace, happiness, and myself is when I'm on my bike. It's like nothing else matters in life.
That's awesome. So how did you get into the biking then?
All right. So yeah, 10 years ago-ish is when I got my first dirt bike, 2007 YZ125. And my ex-husband got me a bike and a long time ago. So got that and I fell in love with it. I love that thing. It was an awesome bike to learn on. Yes, they're really tall too, so I struggled a lot with that, but excelled super quickly. And so, you know, we went camping lots and biked a lot. It was a lot of cut blocks and stuff like that, but nevertheless, it was so fun. And I just loved being on the mountains and exploring and checking out new terrain. And that's kind of how I started. And once, you know, we went our separate ways, first thing I did was bought a bigger bike and I started racing. I'm like, I'm going full force into the dirt bike world. This is where I belong.
That's awesome. So do you think you like got onto the bike to escape the past kind of sort of, and you decide you're going to be a racer and go full on? Would you think that was sort of like part of the rebuilding of a new life without him in it?
Yeah, definitely. Because when we were together, I had, you know, I really wanted to race and get into this, the off-road scenery and start getting more involved, but he didn't want that for me to do. So I knew that this is the path in life that I wanted to go and all that whatnot. I guess, yeah, it was kind of a way to start fresh, new friends, new life, new everything. It was, yeah, it was completely changed. My life was completely changed. It was so different, but it was good. Yeah, it was definitely something that kept me occupied and more focused towards.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for motorcycles or whatever, where do you think you'd be right now? Like,
I'd probably be, gosh, that's a good question. Where would I be? I might be just, you know, training in the gym and probably picked up Muay Thai with my sister and got more heavily involved with that. I always think if there is no motorcycles, that's probably what I would do is become a more of a fighter. So that's probably where I would be.
That's awesome. So it's the fighting spirit just inside you and it's the ring.
You know, what's funny is my sister and I, she's 2 years older than me and about 2 years ago, we made a deal. We switched sports for the year. So my deal was I had to compete in my first Muay Thai and kickboxing tournament, and she was going to train me. And then she had to compete in a season of Hair Scrambles, and I had to train her. So it was like the best year and best summer ever. She trained me for a full year, did my first tournament, and it was awesome. I actually won it, which was sweet. And then my sister, I got her on her little bike. She had a CRF 150, and she did a whole season of Hair Scrambles with the Rocky Club and the Second Gear Club, and she just killed it. It was so sweet, and it was just something that we did together all year, and, you know, got her out dirt biking, and I showed her my world, and she showed me hers, and it was a really cool bonding experience.
That's crazy. So what was it like getting in the ring with a full-on opponent? Not somebody you're sparring with, but somebody who wants to take you down.
Oh, man. You know, because I went in there with no expectations, and it didn't mean as much to me if I lost or won. I was just going in there. I wanted to deliver all the skills that I had learned and put them to the test. So, you know, you're in there, and you're trying to, you know, set your distance and just read the person. And it was intimidating. You get the nerves really kick in. And plus being competitive, you're like, okay, well now it's time to, I don't want to lose in front of my family either. Right. And get my ass kicked. So, it was a crazy experience. Watching the videos after, I remember, like, I don't remember doing that. You kind of black out a little bit and you just go full force in, and getting hit in the face, you don't really feel it as much till after because your adrenaline's going so much. But it was a really cool experience, and I would totally do it again. Just, I guess that doesn't really happen right now. All the tournaments, yeah. Everything's canceled, but.
Yeah, they don't want anybody breathing on each other.
No, I guess not. But very cool. I can't wait to do it again sometime for sure.
Would you say there's a definite difference in intensity with a combatant versus a training partner?
Yes, totally. Because you're forgetting to breathe and you're just kind of throwing everything you got out there. And yeah, it's like the longest 2 minutes of your life. It's super exhausting. The strength and endurance is very overwhelming. And you're like, holy, this is next level. However, the cross training between Muay Thai and kickboxing for off-road riding is unreal. That's probably been the most benefit I've had out of a sports training to cross over to biking, just for endurance wise.
How so? Like, which qualities come across the line?
Being able to push through something where you need the strength and power, but yet the conditioning part of it as well. Because, you know, in an enduro race, if you're struggling to get up a hill and you don't have the strength, or you're getting wheezy and tired, it's insane how that helps you build that cardiovascular and the strength endurance.
That's fair. Have you ever listened to David Goggins or hear any of his stuff?
Not much, no.
He's talking about endurance, and he basically says most of us give up when we've only really put in 40% of what we're capable of.
Seriously, though, yeah.
You need moments like this to show you, like, past that moment of hurt. Like, there's many more levels of hurt you can get to.
There's so many.
I don't know. Being able to put it all out there for 2 minutes of survival could translate into a 1 hour hair scramble.
Oh, yeah, for real though. It's insane. I can believe how fatigue and how quickly your conditioning, you're like, okay, yeah, I might be a little out of shape. It's crazy. And you don't realize it until you're put to a different type of test or a new level of exertion. Right.
Yeah, that's fair. Of the skills you've gained along the way on two wheels, which ones have been the most exciting to acquire, and then which ones have been the most useful?
Most useful as a tool, I would find definitely being able to get your front tire up. So, I mean, wheelies, however, you know, the 12 o'clock wheelies, not super essential or necessary, but just being comfortable with your clutching and being able to get your front tire up helps a lot, especially if you need to quickly react upon a small log or get up some ledges, and just feeling, you know, to get your tire up comfortably, that matters. And carrying momentum, learning to be light on my feet, I find that my body positioning and momentum is more important than the actual, you know, trying the tricks of the pivots and the high wheelies and stuff like that, because you're not really, you don't really depend on those, right? It does look cool, but.
But it's like, I guess getting through the races sometimes, it can be intimidating not being tall. Like, I know when I line up and there's like all the 6 foot guys, it's like, oh, you fuckers. Like, they're standing right on that foot with that gap between the seat and their body. And you're just like, oh, they're going to have no trouble.
Yeah. I'm like, ooh, what is that like? I have to learn to balance really good. And that's another thing, too. I had asked Shane, I'm like, okay, so I'm going down a hill and I have to take a hard right corner. But because I can't, you know, I like doing left corners so I can reach my rear brake better. But right corners are a little more difficult when it's downhill descent, turning really sharp. I'm like, what can you advise me to do that better? He's like, well, you're short. You can't touch. So you need to have damn good balance is what you need. I'm like, okay, no dabbing. Sounds good. I'll just create some good balance here.
So do you think being shorter forces you to work really hard on technique?
Most definitely. Like you need more technique. You need more core strength. You have to be more aware of where you might be able to possibly set a foot. You have to definitely have way better balance because you don't have the forgivingness of being able to just set both feet on the ground, or else you could potentially risk falling over, which you don't really want to do. So most definitely.
Yes, one of the fallovers I've seen in your game reels, I guess, you hit a tree.
Which one? Because that happens a lot.
You hit it more than once, I know. All I know is just like, it was so brutal. You got up right after, so you're in good shape. I just wish I could remember when it was.
Was it in the winter?
Yeah, you posted it in the winter. But I don't know that there was snow around. I feel
it
was just...
I might have hit a rock at Kook and then it kind of hit me sideways and I flew off.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it's just like it's a pretty dramatic earth. And but like that's a part of riding. And do you think that intimidates a lot of female riders when they like they start to follow you and Crystal and Megs and everybody, and like you guys all have these, I don't know, horrible hits with trees and things, and they're up there and they're posted. Do you think that
I get what you're saying, like deters them away from wanting to be more aggressive in that sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, for sure. I mean, there's always that risk for reward, right? And that happens. I go into a ride knowing that I potentially could get really hurt, or, you know, I smoke a tree and it just sends me flying off because, you know, being a small person, you can't touch. It's like releasing an arrow. It's like you're gone. And yeah, it sucks when that happens. But you get up and, you know, you're like, okay, I'm alive. I'm fine. This is all right. And then you just continue going again. It's just, I don't know, I just get up and go, even if I'm hurt, but I still can walk and ride. I'm fine. I'm just going to keep pushing. I think that might be what separates people from the ones who excel more or take a step back, right?
They're definitely two different people.
Yes, totally.
Okay, so have you ever been stuck out in the woods, like from an incident, accident or anything like that?
Yeah, I have. So let's define stuck in the woods. So, I mean, there's been times where we've had to walk out of the woods because we've taken a wrong turn, and then there's injuries where I've been stuck out in the woods.
Oh, gee. We'll go with the more dramatic injury one first, I guess.
Okay. So injury, yeah. The biggest injury I had, most scary crash I've had was last year. And well, I was coming off of a big ride. And of course, you know, you just finished a huge gnarly ride and it happens on the quad trail, the most simple, less complex terrain. I was fourth gear, clipping on her pretty good, and it was so dusty, and for some reason you just feel the need to have to be on each other's tail even though you can't see shit. So you're cruising through the dust, and I went around this tree that was laying on the trail, and I did not see this huge washout. It was like a 4-foot trench just washed out, And before I even had time to see, before the dust cleared, I smoked it, went right into it. There was a log in the center of the washout, and my front tire clipped it and sent me forward over my bike. And my bike was flipped up upside down over top of me. And I was laying there with my legs stuck on my handlebars, and I'd really over hyperextended my leg forwards. And I hit the bar so hard with my legs that they went numb for probably like 10 minutes and I couldn't even feel them or move my toes. And I was like, oh my God, like it was a scary moment where you just feel like you might have paralyzed yourself, or you just think worst case scenario and try and be calm. And everyone was looking where I was because they couldn't see me. They just saw my bike upside down. They didn't realize I was stuck in this hole. And so they found me there, and I was just laying, and I was like, oh my God, like what just happened? It was like the loudest crash I've ever heard. Happened so quick. I'm like, I'm effed. Like this is done. This is my season. And then I just tried to focus. I'm like, okay, tried to move my toes. I can move my toes. That was good. Started to come to my senses a little bit. Got the bike turned up over me, and my friends were like, holy crap, like, are you okay? Like, you alive? How did you not just break your neck? How did you just, how are you still here? Like, it was unreal. Anyways, long story short, yeah, I got out of it. I had to ride out because we were pretty far back still. So I ended up taking a look at my leg, and I knew it wasn't broken. My femur was okay. My shin was okay. It was just, I took some hard impact and really hyperextended my leg, tore a bit of tendons. Luckily, that was all that happened. And from that crash, it took me like months to feel any type of confidence, even on the smallest little hills. I was like, oh my gosh, like I was so scared of getting hurt. You're overcompensating with one leg, but you're still trying to keep on pushing through this injury. It was a very eye-opening experience in the sense of realizing that anything can happen in the blink of an eye. And I had a feeling that day going into that ride, that something, it was my turn, you know, it was my turn to have a big crash. And it was just a matter of when. It's not if, it's when it's going to happen. And it was my turn, and I did. And it was super eye-opening, and it makes you so grateful to come out of that, you know, with as little injury as I had. And being very strong and mobile, I feel like I lessened my risk of injury, which was, you know, super good that I have that ability to be so strong and mobile. Could have been a lot worse than it was, but I ended up coming through, and took me almost a year to be able to have full mobility after that crash.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was going to ask what you just said, like if your level of fitness had anything to do with the mitigation of the damage that would have been done. Like an unfit Courtney in the same spot would have had a different outcome.
100%. I mean, if you are focusing on good mobility and good strength, obviously you're going to have way better, more strong ligaments, more stronger tendons. You're going to be able to take a harder impact. And I feel like that is exactly what saved me, because if I did not have that, I could have just snapped so much easier. And plus my recovery and my nutrition is so on point that all plays into effect too. So I feel like that makes a big difference, and that I'm willing to do whatever it takes to help improve my my recovery. So, you know, the physio, I'll do whatever it takes to get there. I don't care. You know, people like, oh yeah, I go to my physio once a week or this and that, but I'm at home doing all my stretches. I'm doing my strength training to what I can do to help fix the issue and keep it moving, rather than having it tighten up and create a whole bunch of scar tissue. So I feel like your recovery and the way you go upon treating your injuries matter for future you as well. So I always got to think longevity.
Do you ever push the envelope? Like if we'll just say, for example, that it's recommended you take a 3-month break because of whatever, like an injury, and like a month and a half in, you're feeling like $1 million, you know, you still have a recovery road ahead, but you're just like, F it, I want to go ride.
Oh, heck yeah. I do that way too often. Like I have a wrist injury that I've been dealing with for a while, for almost a year. You know, and I never gave it enough time to heal. However, when I'm doing my training in the gym, I will just train what I can, but still try and strengthen it. Like, I won't just do nothing and give it complete rest unless, you know, something's actually broken or completely torn. But I'll always push in. I just feel like that's the athlete no matter what. You're like, I don't care. I'm going biking. I'll tape myself. I remember when I broke my rib, I put a whole bunch of sports therapy tape. I'm like, I'm going riding. I don't care. I need to do this. It's you just do what you got to do, I guess.
With injuries, then you're about to tell us another story of not an injury that kept you, but being lost in the woods or something.
Yeah, there was a group of four of us. We decided to go on a nice adventure ride, and we hadn't been on this trail yet before, and so it was kind of a learning experience. Anyways, missed our turn, ended up having to bushwhack our way through an area we were unfamiliar with, and we ended up getting stuck through a whole bunch of deadfall, and next we know it, we're almost out of fuel. And it's like 9 o'clock at night, it's getting really dark, and we didn't understand that, or didn't think that the truck was that far away. So we just started walking out because we had no other choice. We're like, we don't really have enough supplies for camp or anything like that. So let's just walk out and get more fuel, and then we'll come back because we knew the direction we had to go. But yeah, I took a wrong turn, ended up getting really stuck into the woods. Like, we're basically moving like 10 feet in an hour. It was insane. So walked out, and it was about 7 hours of hiking in your moto gear, up and down mountain terrain, and it was horrible. There's probably like 7 river crossings I had to walk through that were like waist deep on me. And my friend, he had one Hershey bar to share between 4 of us. So we all ate that together, and it was a horrible experience. So, I mean, you live and learn. Now I go more prepared, and I don't ever want to experience that again because it was super overwhelming. And, survival of the fittest out there. I was the smallest one, so I kept my helmet and all my gear on. I'm like, the bears, the cougars, everything's going to eat me first because I'm the weakest link.
Are you ever afraid of animal encounters when you're out there? Like, you don't often ride alone, do you?
No, I don't ride alone ever. I just, you never know what can happen, right? So I know I have friends that do, and good for them, but I won't. Anyways, yeah, I've had bear encounters before, actually a really close one with a grizzly bear during a rocky race. I was sweeping one of the races, and one of the little girls was lost, and she was like, I don't know where I'm going. I'm like, okay, well, follow me. I'll take you out to the main trail, and I'll get you back out to where we need to be. And we weren't that far from camp, which I didn't feel was that far, maybe 5 kilometers, which isn't really far on a bike, but from where you are to 5 kilometers out, it's kind of a distance. So we were going back on the trail, and there was this, she just goes around the corner and she starts screaming. I'm like, what the heck? And I look, and there was this big grizzly bear just standing there on the corner, and it was walking towards us. I'm like, okay, I have this young girl with me. I don't have bear spray or anything with me because I was assuming we were going straight back to camp on the main trail. And I was like, all right, now survival mode. What I did is I came out in front of her, got my bike in front of her in between the bear and her, and got her to turn her bike around because we were going to take a different route so we weren't crossing this bear's path, because for some reason the bear just kept on walking towards us, and it was standing its ground. And usually they'll check you out and they'll kind of walk away, but I wasn't sure if it had cubs in the area or if it had a fresh kill or whatever it was protecting. It was standing quite strong, and it might have been about 40 feet away from us, which is not that far.
Not really, no.
No. And so I got her turned around, and she kept on going, and I backed my bike up walking slowly, and the bear followed us for quite a while. So I was like, all right, we're not going that way. So I took her a whole different route back, and it was pretty scary. I definitely wish I was more prepared in that sense of having protection, because bear encounters are not fun, but it makes you really appreciate Mother Nature more and respect that you're in their territory. And you don't want to mess with that, right? So
yeah, I know. Ed, listening to your conversation yesterday, you mentioned how you stored your bear spray in the wrong spot.
Oh, goodness.
Have you ever thought about carrying an air horn? It's safer to, you know.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I will definitely think about an air horn. Yeah, I can't believe that happened. You know, usually on adventure rides, I would put my bear spray in between my number plate and my forks, and it would just sit nicely tucked in there. Yeah, I just literally forgot to take it out the one race at Fallen Timber and smoked a tree. The can went everywhere. Oh, it was horrible. Like, I don't know if you've ever been peppered or you have.
Yeah.
What? You know what that's like.
I've done like two different versions. One time when bear spray sort of first came to the market, we gave a little burst into a bathroom. And I shut the door, and then we were all betting money to see who'd go in there the longest.
Oh my God.
it was fucking brutal.
Like, and then, why?
Another time I had a can in my truck, but the little safety tab had been gone missing. And so a piece of gear pushed up against it and sent a burst off inside the cab of the vehicle. And I started to pull over right away because I was just like ready to vomit. And the RCMP pulled me over because they saw me get out of the vehicle and like throwing up.
Oh my gosh.
And then she's like, no, I can smell it. I know you're telling the truth.
Like, that is intense. So potent. Like, even if it's sprayed in the same area as you, it's potent and it's like bleeding your eyes. But yeah. I couldn't imagine that. Like, oh.
It was just a tiny little burp too. Just like, I heard it go off. And like my spider sense went off right away. Like, I know what that was. And before I could do anything about it, it was in my face. So yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, that's something else, hey? That stuff is crazy. And you know, with bear spray too, a lot of people don't even realize or even know how to use it for that matter. You know, it's one can only has about 8 seconds worth of life. And you have to be at least 5 meters away from your target for it to even be any benefit to you or your predator, right?
Yeah.
You really get a close.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah. Like, just think a little over a truck length away.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, like, no thanks. I don't want to experience that. But if it ever happens, I'm fully prepared to do that. But scary stuff with animal encounters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can buy like training cans of the bear spray so you could practice. I think some of them are rechargeable, but it really shows you how quickly it's like, and she's done.
Like spurts. That's, it's crazy stuff.
So you've done a lot of riding around the country, and have you been down to the States riding? I understand that you have. Where's your favorite spot to go?
So in the States, I went to the Climb Cowtag event in Idaho. That was super cool. Their whole concept of that whole event was super neat. They had like a map, and you had to reach these certain checkpoints, and each checkpoint was worth a certain amount of credits towards prize tickets. And it was, their trail systems were a lot like, say if you were to go to Bear Creek or Kelowna or Revy, their trail systems like that. So they're all rated like a ski level as far as difficulty goes. The terrain was amazing. Like, there are black diamonds, like, holy, was it neat. And the terrain there was weird because it's just mountain after mountain after mountain. And you look around and it's so easy to get lost there because you don't even know which way would be west or east or south. Like, everything's kind of opposite there. It was so different. But you could just keep going for miles and miles. The terrain was unreal. Lots of goat trails. The single track was epic. I really enjoyed it there. Other than that, I've rode just to race the Desert 100 in Odessa, Washington. That terrain is a lot like home, but just with no trees. Basically, you've got lots of rock, single track, and tumbleweed everywhere, but it was a cool race. It's wide open. I like that. It was fun. No trees to risk hitting and getting taken out, so that's cool.
That's Not smashing the trees is always a plus.
Be careful because the tumbleweeds all stop onto the hidden rocks. So if you don't, if you're cruising along, you're like, oh, I'll go over here. I'll run over the tumbleweed. There's probably a rock hiding underneath that. So,
oh, wow. That's a good one. Like, holy shit.
Oh my gosh. The amount of times I've clipped one of those, I'm like, how am I still alive? That was a wild ride. Holy crap.
Do you ride fairly loose then, like in the handlebars, or are you like gripping of death?
Yeah, no, I try and ride super loose. Basically just have enough grip to use my controls, but I'm gripping with my ankles and my legs if I must, but usually lots of ankle grip on the bike and controlling with my knees. But I want to stay loose, but still in control, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, the more relaxed you are on the bike, the easier it is to react to change.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Deflections are easier to take on.
100%.
So is there other things that you've come to, I don't know, recognize as real common mistakes for early riders or new riders? Like now you could just see somebody with their fresh kit and you're just like, oh, I know what you're going to do because we've all done this.
Probably, you know, the body positioning or, that's a hard one to say, but yeah, I guess, a lot of the times too, you'll see people go up hills and they'll be sitting so far back on the bike and then they'll slip off and then basically just let the bike go. And rather than pulling in the clutch, you're like, you could just see that coming. You're like, okay, if you know you're going over backwards, just pull in the clutch rather than just sending your bike and letting it go, whiskey throttling it. That's a huge common mistake I feel like a lot of beginners do, is they lose the confidence going up the hill and they just start falling back, but then don't pull in the clutch and just let the bike go away from them.
Yeah, that's fair. I was told basically find the throttle that you're comfortable with, a throttle position you're comfortable with, and then modulate the speed with your clutch. So like, you know, lock at a setting with your right hand and just do all the work with your left hand versus riding up the hill, trying to find the perfect throttle and leaving your clutch out the whole time. Like, yeah, I don't
know. Lots of clutch work for sure. Yeah.
Well, we sort of like, I was in advance, I was going to wonder how Facebook for your sponsors, like racing versus Facebook, do they find value in one versus the other? You know, if you were to stop racing, would you still have the same support like Climb and Beta, or do they really need you to race?
No, for sure. I'd still have the support because, more or less it's, they like the adventure aspect, the, you know, not so much the racing, but, usually those kind of companies see the most out of their brand by the influencers, not necessarily just the racers, right? So having me, myself, just being out there, giving back to the communities, and if it's not just racing, but they see that you're out there promoting their brand, they love that because that's usually a bigger percentage of people that are into riding is the adventure people and the influencers, not necessarily just the racers. So for sure, they would see the support.
Off-track riding is probably more common. Like,
it is. It really is. I mean, yeah, you see so much of that and lots of families doing that together. And that's what builds, you know, a lot of the off-road community is the people who are out there adventure riding and having fun.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, I found it all to be very family oriented. Racing is sort of like back burner thought for me. It could be because I'm not very competitive. I could care less. Like, whereas the other guys I know, they're super competitive. So for them, it's like when they're not racing, they're racing.
Yes, you know, always.
Yeah.
Even when I'm riding for fun, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, where it's just for fun. I don't need to be in race mode all the time. But it's just, it's habit. You just want to go and shred as hard as you can for as long as you can and just keep pushing yourself. And I don't know why, but we just do it. It's just in our heads. Go, go, go.
It makes sense. Like every opportunity out there is a chance to train. Like,
yes.
The slower the group, the more you focus on specific tasks or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So. More technical riding, you know, you're going with a slower group and you're going into that ride, you know that. All right, okay, today I'm going to work on just different techniques and different skills, or while everyone's hanging out or going slower, you can hit the same section over and over and then catch up, or there's different ways to improve your riding even if the group isn't as quick.
Do you always have a game plan when you head out for the day, or do you just ride by the seat of your pants kind of thing?
I usually have a game plan. I have something that I want to focus on. Like, okay, today this is what I want to work on. All right. Or if I see something, and I usually kind of know what I want to do, because from my previous ride, if I had kept messing up on something, like, okay, well, this really bugs me. So all week I've been thinking about what I want to do to improve my next ride. So I'm going to go out and practice that. So for instance, like last weekend riding in, Cook and Tautau Creek, I was going uphill and I really struggled hitting this log uphill and just being able to catch more traction after the log and still carry momentum. So I'm like, okay, now this whole week I've been thinking about how I'm going to approach this differently and practice that next time I go out and ride. So I kind of always have something I'm working towards to improve that.
That's fair. You're just trying to clean up the loose end sort of thing.
Exactly. So
what's your tactic now? Are you going to sort of do more compression before you hit the log, or?
Yeah, honestly, get my wheel up, hit it harder. My body positioning, staying on the throttle a little longer rather than getting off the throttle and then back on the throttle. So I'm just spinning out. There's so many different things, I guess, to work on. And it's nice riding with Jared all the time because he helps point those out, or sometimes he'll video it and show me what I'm doing wrong. I'm like, hey, try this. And having him break it down for me, it helps change so much. I'm like, okay, now I got to visualize it, try it, put it into perspective and see how it works. And a lot of the time I see that progression quickly. However, I got to keep working on it. So it's nice to have someone like that to help keep showing you what you need to be doing and pointing it out. Because sometimes you don't really realize what you're doing wrong. You're like, why can't I do it? I'm doing it right. But really, you're probably not, right? Or else it'd be wondering.
I realize that we can't see ourselves in the third person. And whenever we try to look, we're always being favorable.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
The camera never lies.
Does not.
No. And so riding with Jared, he likes to film things and break them down. Have you tried his sort of remote training thing yet?
Yeah, so he's set me up on his training program. He's got me to look at it, which is really cool. And the way he's got it set up is so awesome. It explains everything to a T, to a point, breaks it down perfectly. I'm working on setting up an area at my dad's house at his little acreage to work on a lot of those drills. So as soon as the rest of the snow's gone at his place, I can do that. So super excited to try a lot of those skills and just bring it down to the basics too, and almost relearn the start, right? You know, sometimes we forget that going back to the basics and the beginner levels is where you need to step back to move forward a few more steps, right?
Yeah, there's a thing about we all like to gloss over the foundation or the fundamentals and just get straight to the wheelies. And it's sort of like not very progressive.
It's not. I need to break some old bad habits that I have developed from my goon life, you know, the mentality of like, okay, I'm just going to send it and hit it as hard as fast as I can. And instead of focusing on my technique and skill and maybe slowing it down and breaking it down to be, you know, ride with more finesse, like I need to just take a step back sometimes and remember, okay, don't need to full goon everywhere. Don't need to just send it. I need to actually know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it this way, right?
That's fair. Did you miss the goon days?
Well, I mean, sometimes it's fun, but I like working smarter, not harder, and preserving my energy rather than just hitting it and hoping for the best and wrecking my bike, right?
I'm
thinking of my bike now too, because it's so new and I don't want to wreck it. I really want to take care of this one and not have it look like it's been, you know, lady ridden.
I don't think lady ridden means shit in Alberta. I think it's
not at all.
No, the women here ride pretty well like the guys do. you know, if not as fast, they crash just as hard.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
If not harder.
Yeah. Okay. Just look at the crash. Oh, well, no, I'm not one to talk. I crash a shit ton. I'm probably the most crashing guy out there. Okay. And with Shane, you've ridden with Shane. Have you tried using the cardio with him, like the two-way communicator?
Yes. Oh my goodness. That is seriously the best thing. And I wish I had that when I was on, if I'm on rides with my friends, because, you know, he was able to correct me right then and there, tell me what I needed to be doing. Okay, move your feet back, get your chin forward more. All right, you're coming up to this hill climb. And he's like, you're going to get into your crouching tiger position and just tell me everything I need to be doing before getting there. And it really helped me focus and just do so much better. Like if I was doing something that I wasn't sure why it wasn't working, he was able to see and tell me right away, and I change it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. I feel like we all need these.
It speeds things up. It's almost like he's a robot or remote control dirt biker. Hey, he's like, okay, now I want you to a little more throttle.
Yes, exactly. But that is what's so amazing about him as a coach, is that how he can just look at that and see, okay, you need to change this. And it just completely changes you as a rider. You're like, whoa, I just went up a level by changing one little thing because he could see what I was doing wrong that I never knew for so long. It's wild.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
I want to get into one of his classes. I feel like he could advance me a fair amount.
Oh, I so recommend it. Like, unreal. And he's so down to earth and such a family oriented person too, and just can really relate to you. And I just love the way he could communicate. You know, I've had other training too by other coaches, and just the way he breaks it down, communicates, make you feel really comfortable. I loved that so much. It was awesome.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I feel bad for those guys with the pandemic sort of like kneecapping them just as they're like starting to do their thing.
Yeah,
it sucks, but whatever. I mean, we're all in it together. Everyone's still riding.
Exactly.
Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to, like sponsors, family?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely have to thank my family, my parents. They've been there for all my support. They come to watch my races all the time. And I mean, you met my mom.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, they're so fun. I love the support, and they just want to see me happy. And I love that so much. My sisters, I appreciate them, and my little niece. Oh yeah. All my family and my sponsors for sure. Like, I'm super fortunate to have the support I do, you know, as far as with Beta goes, Climb, and even my graphics company, TNT and Absolute Fitness. Everything's been, they've been awesome. I'm super thankful for all that. And I can't wait to grow more with them as a brand and grow myself. So yeah, I'm super, super appreciative of all of that.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much, Courtney. And I wish you the best. I'm just going to pause this here or stop this here. We can chat. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.